Welcome to the Mattcast for Christian creatives. This is a podcast that strives to bring the art world and the church world a little closer together. My name is Matt Anderson, and I want to thank you for joining us. It was probably about 20 years ago. I was at a movie theater, and I was watching a film in the season of the Academy Awards. And at that time, I was the guy who, when I found out what films were nominated for Best Picture, I wanted to go out and see them. And most of the time, I would know next to nothing about what the film was going to be, maybe just a general movie trailer I had seen. So one particular year, I remember going to see a movie called The Thin Red Line. And everyone was saying it was a bit of a artsy film, and didn't really know what that meant. But I decided to give it a try one afternoon, and so I went. I saw a matinee of The Thin Red Line, and I believe it portrays the Battle of Guadalcanal, but it does so in a very non-typical way. And I have to admit, there's not exactly much of a story that's going on. And I remember just kind of watching it after a couple of hours thinking, okay, this is going to make sense eventually, right? And by the time I finally came to the end of it, I thought, I don't really know what I just watched for 3 hours. And then I thought, maybe it's just me. Maybe I just didn't get it until two guys who were senior citizens were sitting behind me. They might have been veterans even. I remember the one said to the other, "Well, that was a waste of 3 hours." And I think when it comes to the art world, one of the most annoying things that you can encounter is inaccessibility. In other words, this is what I think of the ridiculous notion that the fewer people who understand and comprehend art, that the better or quote-unquote higher it is. A few years ago, I wanted to expose my nephew to some things of some pieces of art. So I took him to a museum that I had not really been at before myself, but it was near where he lived. And it turned out to be a modern art museum, which is fine because there's some really cool modern art. But I remember as we were walking through, and we would just we would stare at a painting of two circles. And I remember my nephew would look at me saying, "So, what is this?" And I'd look back at him thinking, "It's two circles." And perhaps I'm just too stupid to understand the greater meaning behind it. But I am the guy, much as I love going to museums, I'm the guy who needs the listening device. I'm the guy who's on his cell phone trying to get the little factoid about the painting that I'm looking at. And look, I'm not trying to say that everything needs to be paint by number in the visual art world here. And sometimes because I'm not an insider, I may not be aware of the nuances that the artist necessarily was going for. And it's okay to learn and discover that. I love that. I love learning new things, including interpreting art, because there's still so much that I don't know. And it can be really fulfilling if it doesn't require 4 years of education. What I'm talking about is art that is created simply for itself. It almost purposely says nothing. And I think if we're really going to be true artists, if we're going to be especially Christian artists, my word, our art has to be accessible. And we say this about the church a lot, and rightly so, but I kind of want to defend the church here a little bit. We use terms like Christianese to describe kind of our lingo from Christian to Christian. We have certain phrases and words that we use that maybe aren't necessarily understood to the general population. But can I just say every subculture has its own lingo? I'm purposely fascinated by subcultures on all levels. But every one of those, it could be people who go out and play bingo. It could be people who are involved in specific sports. It could be people in the fashion world. It could be people in entertainment. It could be people who do cup stacking, for heaven's sakes. Every subculture has its own lingo to it. And the challenge we have in a subculture, we either have to say, you're not welcome here. We like just having our little group. Or we make what we do accessible because we want more people to come along. I think that's one of the few frustrations I get in the art world. It almost seems like some don't want anyone else to come on board. They want to feel in the superior position. And we talked about elitism in the last episode. And if you haven't heard it, I'd invite you to do that. But it's important for artists to not try to impress other artists. I know we want the recognition of peers, and I get that, but that is not whom we should be aiming for when we're creating. Sometimes within our own bubble, we can fall into such an echo chamber within that bubble in which everybody inside that bubble likes something, but people outside of it are just left scratching their heads. I think about that film that I watched, and it was beautifully shot, and the acting was fantastic, and you know all the things, but there was no connective tissue. There was no sense of an arc. There was no sense of story. I left there going, okay, that was something. And I wondered if people within that little bubble were saying, oh, that's tremendous. Oh, that is, oh, look at that. Isn't that amazing? Yes, it really is amazing. And nobody had the guts to say, I don't get it. It's tough when people are made to feel inferior because they don't get it. Worse, when artists are intentionally trying to do it. And I've seen it. I've seen it in many different genres of art. And something is just done almost for the pleasure of itself. And it's almost as if the audience were like, hey, hi, we're the people who paid to get in. We're the people keeping you going. And that gets forgotten. And getting it is our job as artists. We need to make sure that people get it. And if they haven't, we frankly haven't done our job. And by the way, let's not call that dumbing it down either, because I think it takes far more intelligence and far more ingenuity to create something powerful that is also accessible to the audience. We do not create for the critics. We create for the people who are already rooting us on. The people who have decided to spend their time and their hard-earned money to come and see or hear what we have created. And we want people to come aboard. We want people to learn something that they've never known before. We don't want people to feel like outsiders in the art world. We want to be able to say, hey, here's an aspect of art maybe you've never caught before, but here it is. And we're teaching while we're creating. Isn't that the goal? Don't we want to bring more people with us? I know those who are not as engaged would say that the larger the audience, the worse the art. I would only say to those people that they don't get it. They're the ones who don't get it. And I can only hope they come around and realize that the more people we can bring on this journey, the more we can work together to do something that really matters in our world today. At St. Egregious Church, we desire your worship experience to be the best in town. And we do that by assuring that you never have to think about changing your life in any fashion.
We say there's enough negativity in life, so why have it at church? Around here, we like to call our church the No Conviction Zone. And now, here's our celebrity, Pastor Dirk Kennedy, to tell us what's coming up.
Bruh, we are totally crushing it here at St. Egregious. We are killing it, maiming it, completely assaulting it, beating it into submission. We're beheading it, replacing it with cotton, and using it as our personal Q-tip. You will definitely want to take advantage of our new Gold Circle seating. For just $29.95 a month, you can have a reserved seat in one of our luxury loungers that we got from a theater that shut down. It's a whole other level of enjoying church, so sign up today.
St. Egregious is now located in the old AMC Theater, between the old Office Depot and the old Mountain Jack's restaurant. Service promptly begins when we all feel like it. St. Egregious, because the last thing we want in church is for you to feel uncomfortable.
So for me, when it comes to the church being accessible, I think we need to listen to many of the same challenges that the art world faces in this. When you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that we call the gospel books, Jesus was such a wonderful, stark contrast from the Pharisees and all the religious leaders of the day. Those folks were inaccessible. And the gospel writers go to very great lengths to show the disparity between the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes, all those guys, and Jesus. I mean, by their actions, their haughtiness, and even their wardrobe, the religious leaders were inaccessible. And they loved it, by the way. They saw all the other people as, you know, the great unwashed and the massive ignorant. They were downright unapproachable. And religiously, they even put extra requirements upon the people beyond what even the law of Moses prescribed. And then, by the way, they didn't live up to any of it in their private lives. They loved to hear themselves pray and talk and to show how much grand learning they had had in their rabbinical studies. They purposely spoke above the people's heads. Now, if anyone could have intimidated their audience, it was Jesus, because, I don't know, the smartest guy who ever walked the earth, kind of. He literally knew everything, but he did the opposite. To me, this is the perfect example of why what we do must be accessible. Jesus was a master storyteller. People would be around him, and he would take objects from their everyday lives because he lived an everyday life. He grew up in a very average home, training as a carpenter. He lived kind of that blue-collar life. And so he would take objects from life that people would understand. He would use things from farming. He would talk about a pearl or a net. He would use all kinds of spiritual object lessons that everyone could grab onto. I think if Jesus were alive today, he would talk about things like apps. He would probably talk about taking an Uber. He'd probably talk about streaming. He was so approachable. He was so accessible that he literally needed to sneak away if he wanted some God time. He was so within reach of people. We all just despise that feeling that we're made to feel less intelligent than maybe we are. Personally, I feel like that every time I go to the mechanic. And I think they can smell me coming, by the way. And they know that I have absolutely no knowledge on this subject. And they'll be like, yeah, your converberator is messing up with your figurementation. And I'd be like, oh, you know. And I know they're lying, and I think they know that I know they're lying, but there's nothing we can do about it. Oh, man, I hate to be at such a disadvantage like that. But then I've actually had mechanics who have brought me into the shop, and while my car is up on the lift, they'll literally take me under the car, and they'll say, hey, see this right here? See this connection? See how that's rusting? We're going to need to replace that because that's going to bring this into this part, which causes this to happen. And suddenly, I know something. And they have explained something to me because they're assuming I don't know. And I love that. And I think the best preachers I have ever heard are the people who are so well studied, who know the scriptures, they know theology, they are so smart that the way they convey truth almost sounds like they have no formal education whatsoever. Those are the absolute best preachers in the world. I think the best compliment that I can get as a preacher is anytime someone comes up to me after a message, after a service is finished, and somewhere in talking about my message, they'll say something like, and you know, you just made it so simple. I love it when the word simple gets used because I feel like I hit the bullseye. I felt like everyone in the audience could grab onto it. If the only thing I hear after a message is, good job, good job, good job, I feel like I've missed the mark in some way. You know, every biblical teaching, every sermon really needs to answer one basic question. So what? I used to have a sign that hung up in my office that had just those two words. So what? I've probably had hundreds of message ideas or even developed outlines and even written whole sermons that I have had to scrap over the decades because it did not answer that question. I mean, the outline looked absolutely beautiful. It had alliteration and 3 points and all the necessary components of what we consider a great sermon, but there was no take home. It was inaccessible. People would be left in the audience going, well, I don't know, I guess that was something. Just like me with the film. And gone are the days in church that we can talk in code and then just assume everybody is latching on to what we're saying as teachers or preachers or you name it. Gone are the days when we can just assume that everybody in the audience knows a particular Bible story. We must assume nothing. We need to explain David and Goliath. We need to explain Noah and the ark or Daniel in the lion's den. But I would just now personally, if you're a teacher or a pastor or a preacher, when you are communicating to an audience, I just want to challenge you to only deal with one story at a time. Sometimes we will use a Bible story to illustrate something in a story, but I think that can really garble things up a little bit because now we have to explain the second story that we're using as an illustration. It's great to have scriptural support, and there's certainly a way to do that, but just try to analyze one story per lesson or message because we want people to just grab onto it. We want this to be accessible. It's not about trying to sound really smart or trying to compete with somebody that we heard who's an expert in theology. And of course, we have to think through all of our kind of insider and theological words to make sure they're understood by everyone in the audience. For instance, here's something I do sometimes. I want to make a point about sanctification. And I'll say it this way. I'll say, okay, let me talk to you about a $5 word here called sanctification. it's one of those words that we all agree with, but we really don't know what it means. Because we'll say, oh man, how important is it to be sanctified? I'm like, oh man, we got to be sanctified. Oh my word. Yeah. Yes. And then we say, what does it mean? And we go, no idea. And so I will take the time. I'll say all that, by the way. And then I'll say, here's what sanctification is. And then I try to break it down in the most understandable everyday language possible. We need to explain words like fellowship. If you have artists in the audience, when they hear the word fellowship, they're thinking something very different than the typical churchgoer. Look, we're not teaching the religion department at Harvard. And we can razzle-dazzle people with all kinds of stuff that we know. But if our intention is just to look impressive, wow, God help us. We've so wasted everyone's time. I mean, we're talking to folks who have very different lives, and they don't have the time to submerge into the Word of God like we do. I always feel this whenever, because I work with, as a volunteer for a modern dance company, and from time to time, I will need to address an audience who have come to see a dance performance or donors, something like that. And it's funny, I tell people, it's like those Australian actors who come to America and do the American accent. And they're so good at it, you don't even realize that they're Australian until you hear them later. That's what I feel like I'm trying to do whenever I'm in front of artistic audiences, because it's not my native tongue. And I have to remember it's a playbill. It's not a bulletin. I mean, I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but really it's one of those things about transcending language and transcending audiences. And that's something we need to do in everyday life, is really try to understand where people are coming from. Worship leaders, in our song selection, I think we need to make sure that the lyrical content, yes, it's biblical, it's certainly theological, but it's also clear. I mean, I've heard my share of inaccessible songs that were so complicated. I mean, half the congregation had their arms crossed at the halfway point of the song. I mean, like after three pre-choruses and five bridges and six verses, I mean, I'm exhausted. I can't imagine how a guest must feel. And we have to do all we can to bring everybody with us. I think one of the most frustrating things is when people come to church, but it still feels like they're looking through a storefront window at all the people having fun inside, but they're stuck out on the street. So in the churches we create and present, don't aim for the board members or the deacons or the stakeholders. In worship leading or creating or preaching, aim for the person who is experiencing this for the very first time. Assume nothing. Keep them in your mind as you are planning and preparing. Even if it feels repetitive to explain people what we're doing in worship right now, remember that there is someone who needs to hear this, someone who needs to belong to something, someone who needs to see that the church is not obsolete. They're not some insider club when you can't quite get in here, that they can come inside and stop looking through the glass to see the richness that's within. Well, we appreciate you being a part of the Mattcast. Our music is by Sound of Fusion. We hope to see you again soon. This has been a production of Monumental Ministries. For more info, go to mattministry.com. Hey, thanks for having me over. I had a wonderful time.